A un primero de mayo.
Hello and welcome to the Pick and Pop Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Dusenberry Jr. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD. That's TheESCMD. Follow along the show on Twitter using the hashtag Pick and Pop. Use that to keep up with when the show is dropping, other news and notes and tidbits about the show. Subscribe and rate on iTunes, Apple iTunes. Search Pick and Pop Podcast. That's Pick and Pop, no and, just the letter N. Pick and Pop Podcast. Google Play, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud.com/showfreesports. All places you can find the Pick and Pop Podcast. Man, so it is late on a Thursday night. I just watched the Cavs come back from 17. Matter of fact, I just watched John Wall shoot away a 17-point lead. Bruh. 7-plus minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Wiz are on the road against the Cavs. Ty Lue's first game back. Make some lineup changes just to show that he is, in fact, the coach and not LeBron. So Jeff Green gets to start. Tristan Thompson back to making love to that bench. And a back-and-forth game gets kind of blown out in the second half as, again, the Wiz are up 17 points with a little over 7 minutes left. And they take an L. They take an absolute L. And the defensive scheme became real clear for the Cavs. We're just going to let John Wall shoot. Make sure Bradley Beal don't get no open threes. Make sure, you know, Markieff Morris isn't down there horsing anybody in the paint. Just let John Wall go 1-on-5 and get the jumper. As long as you contest it, more than likely it's going to be a brick. And outside of one Jimmy that went in with about 2 minutes left, or just under 2 minutes left, it was brick city for John Wall. Absolute brick city. Throwing a couple of turnovers too. A couple of key ones where Osman intercepted the ball and pretty much iced the game and iced the comeback from 17 down with a little over 7 minutes left. And that's why the Wizards are the Wizards, bro. That's why you can't trust them. That's why you absolutely, positively, no matter what John Wall and Bradley Beal spew in the offseason, no matter how many interviews they do saying they the best backcourt in the league, no matter what Scottie Brooks tells you about the improvement of Otto Porter, it doesn't matter. They're still just the Wizards. That's all they're ever going to be. Can't trust them. And that's also why the Cavs are the Cavs and LeBron's going to be in the finals for what, the 8th straight year? Because that's the East. Tonight was a microcosm of the East in a nutshell. Down 17 at the crib. Ty Lue coming back, shaking the lineup up. Just to show that I am a coach. LeBron doesn't run everything. I took a quick sabbatical. Now I'm back. I took the FMLA real quick. Had some PTO. Took that. Came back. All right, Tristan. Back to the bench. Jeff Green, you've been getting buckets since I've been gone. All right, keep that momentum going. Putting you in. We losing at the crib down 17 to a playoff team in our conference. LeBron goes bully ball. Straight pulling up from three. Taking the ball to the rack on Oubre, Otto Porter, Morris. It didn't matter. They were not good enough to stay in front of the king. And then on defense, they're like, yo, I'm tired of seeing Scott and Beal in these corners, hitting these cheap, easy threes. Let John Wall go 1-on-5. And that's what they did. And they boxed out, got rebounds. Gortat missed a couple bunnies in the paint. Scott missed a bunny in the paint. John Wall went John Wall with bad passes and open jump shots that he kept bricking, building PJs with it. And then the Cavs are off and running. So when LeBron goes into bully ball mode, when LeBron decides I'm Karl Malone with handles and nobody can stop me, and just penetrates three straight times to the paint, getting and ones, and then John Wall is shooting his team out of the game, there's nothing you could do about it. And they can come down. You know how we're used to seeing teams like the Warriors and the Rockets being able to make up such a huge deficit in a short amount of time just because of the threat of the three-pointer. Cavs don't have that. They just have Karl Malone with handle. That's the equivalent of, you know, Steph going on a three-point barrage, or the Rockets just hitting four straight threes in the matter of a couple of possessions. That's the Cavs equivalent. Karl Malone with handle deciding, get the hell out the way. I'm taking the ball from the top of the key. And I'm going to penetrate, and nobody's going to want to stay in front of me because they're going to get trucked. And nobody can pick me because my handles is nice. And then you got a point guard who I've been told is elite. A point guard who I've been hearing is upper tier, upper echelon. A point guard that I keep hearing is top five. You can't be a top five point guard and you can't shoot. If you can't shoot, then you need to be like Rondo and be so overly dominant with the assist numbers that that kind of makes your jumper null and void and not necessary, not applicable to the argument. John Ball's not that. His assist numbers look nice, but he's not the type of pass in the flow of the offense type of point guard. So if you're going to be upper echelon, if you're going to be a guy that's considered elite, yes, he got the max money. He'll always get max money just because of the talent and the ceiling that people perceive that the talent to have. But after all that is said and done, he can't hit contested 19 footers. And at times tonight, he couldn't hit open 16 footers. And that's how the Cavs got back in the game and take him down. So 119-115, man, that's a bad loss for the Wizards. That is a horrific, really bad, really ugly loss for your Washington Wizards. That's a bad one, bro. That's a bad one. And let's see if we can get these standings updated to the second here. All right, so the Wizards now drop to the 7th seed. Miami at the 6th. So now they're a full game behind Miami. Cleveland holds firm to the 3 seed. They're only a half a game up on Philly. And man, right now, if you're Washington, you're in the spot you want to be at 7, because 7 now has become the magical spot in the East, because right now, at the moment, that's where the Boston Celtics are at. And what I was going to lead this pod off with was the Celtics because of the Kyrie news. Kyrie is done. He's going to have surgery, going to be out 4 to 6 months. He's done for the rest of the season, obviously. Won't be back. He's looking at, you know, at the earliest, a late August, early September type of situation. I was ready to come on here and talk about what that means. I was ready to come on here and do all that. But the fact of the matter is, even if Kyrie were to come back, and the Celtics were already prepared to play their first round without Kyrie. Now it's just a matter of, well, he's just not coming back at all. It really didn't matter anyway, right? Like, we don't need to sit here and talk about how huge of a loss this is. It's a loss, yes, but we weren't expecting that much from this team anyway. I wasn't. Any of y'all were really expecting the Celtics to go no more than one round? I mean, 2 probably would have exceeded my expectation, but they damn sure weren't going to the finals. And it would have been slightly surprising to see them in the Eastern Conference Finals with even with Kyrie. So now they're definitely about the paint, and now everybody wants to face them. I mean, you're looking at the bottom 3 teams in the East right now. All the teams are locked in. We know who's going to the playoffs. So all a matter of seeding. So in regards of Miami, Washington, and Milwaukee, 6, 7, 8, they're only separated by 1 game. One game in the win column. So anything can happen between now and the last day of the regular season next Wednesday. But everybody wants to be 7 now because everybody wants to play Boston. Because you got Toronto at 1, who's not necessarily the strongest 1 seed either. But now you have a clear fraudulent number 2 seed. Clearly fraudulent. You know, the Celtics might end up winning 55 games, and you think, you know, if you're Milwaukee, are you scared? You scared of Al Horford? You scared of Terry Rozier? Jaylen Brown? Jason Tatum? You got the Greek Freak. You got Giannis Antetokounmpo. You shouldn't be scared. You got Eric Bledsoe, Jabari Parker, Chris Middleton, Antetokounmpo. I got all those dudes, and I'm supposed to be scared of some damn Terry Rozier? Marcus Smart? I'm supposed to be scared of that. Nah. So everybody's trying to get that. Everybody wants to be in the 7 hole because they think Boston's going to hold off. You know, they had a chance to catch Toronto at 1. That's definitely not happening now. It's a wrap now. So with that being said, Boston's more or less locked in at the 2, which means everybody wants to be 7. You're Miami. Can Miami be Boston? 4 out of 7? D-Wade, Whiteside, Dragic. Is that enough? 4 out of 7? Again, it's 4 out of 7. 3 out of 5, different story. But 4 out of 7? I think the only team that could really benefit legitimately is Milwaukee. But Milwaukee has to get past Washington. And if Washington keeps balling like how they did tonight, it's a good chance Milwaukee could pull that off. So, not only are we talking about Kyrie in regards to what's going to happen now to the Boston Celtics, but what's it going to look like next year and beyond. 2 years from now, this contract is up. After next year, that contract is up, right? So, this year and then next year. If you're Boston, you're going to see hopefully one full season of what you intended you were getting this year. Gordon Hayward, Kyrie, Al Horford. And now you're having pieces that are even more developed than they probably would have been had Hayward and Kyrie been healthy, right? You're going to have a more developed, a more further along Jason Tatum, more further along Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown. They're still going to be a really good team. But do y'all think that's going to be as good as a further along Joel Embiid, a further along Ben Simmons, Covington, Saric, and whatever they add in free agency, complete the process? Is that going to be better than that? I don't think so. And then we got Toronto, who's always there. Toronto's always there. Toronto outside chance again. Let me see. Can they get 60 wins? 56 and 22. Quick math. That is 78 games. They got an outside chance to get 60. They win all the rest of the games. A 60-win Toronto Raptor team. Nobody's got faith in them. I don't got no faith in them. We talked about this last pod. And then they go in here and they keep taking L's to teams that they need to beat. They play the Cavs again. The Cavs put the whooping on them again. Then they go beat Boston with no Kyrie, and now they got their chest out again. They can't beat the teams that really matter in a big spot, whether it's regular season or postseason. They spit the bit. Kyle Lowry, I think, is a fraudulent all-star. I've seen it enough. I've watched him enough where he's a bottom feeder. Kyle Lowry is a bottom feeder. He will destroy the lower half point guards. He will go toe-to-toe and have duels with the medium-tier point guards in the league. But when he's going up against top-notch players or upper echelon elite point guards, it's a wrap for Kyle Lowry. He's the one getting exposed. It happens too many damn times. Too many damn times to be considered an all-star, to be considered a perennial all-star, an upper echelon, borderline max player in this league. Too many times he's come up short in the playoffs. Too many times he's looked lackadaisical. We know he's had weight issues in the past. The game is not fluid enough for me to feel confident having Kyle Lowry as my number two option, because it's still DeRozan. DeRozan, at least I've seen the advancement in his game. Now, I broke down how last week, or the last part, how it's more or less just he's taking long threes instead of long twos, but the fact that he's making them at a similar clip makes all the difference in the world. Stretches the floor, helps the floor to offense, etc., etc. But in regards to Kyle Lowry, any of y'all see an improvement in his game? Can you pinpoint something that Kyle Lowry has clearly been working on and has put forth in motion in a positive way? He was never that good on D. He was always solid on offense, more of a penetrator. The jump shot has never been that on point. It's been all right. Three-point game has been all right. He's a compiler. He plays well off of DeRozan. They got that Beal John Wall thing. And that's the problem. It's a whole backcourt thing and nothing else. You can't trust Serge Ibaka. We don't know how old he is. And then the fact of the matter is, his best years were in OKC. And he's been living off that cred from 4 or 5 years ago. Valanciunas is a stiff. He's more of the old guard that's trying to hang on and learn the transition by shooting more from the outside and expanding the range of his jump shot. But he's just an old dinosaur trying to hang on. The Raptors are what we think they are. A good team, never a championship quality team, an above average team. They're never going to be that team that makes the Western Conference shake. They're never going to be that team that puts fear into LeBron. And that's the key. As long as LeBron's in the East with a decent enough roster, he's always going to be one up on DeRozan and Lowry. Because at the end of the day, you can find ways to stop those two. You haven't found, no team has found a way to stop LeBron. Earlier in his career, you can game plan for him, force him to take more jump shots, so on and so forth, force him into pressure situations and let him deal with the conundrum of whether he wants to be Magic or Jordan. You could have done all of that early in his career, but once he got a couple chips, once he went down there to his real college years, which were out there in South Beach and did a 4-year bid, he got all that out of his system. Now he's at peak status, peak LeBron powers. So you can't game plan for him. You can't stop him. You can stop Lowry. Lesser teams have done it. You can stop DeRozan. Good teams have done it. And as long as that's the case, when you look at teams like Washington, when you look at teams like Toronto, you know, Boston had a chance with that Kyrie thing where that could have been an intangible that Cleveland would have had a hard time trying to figure out. But with no Hayward and the getting older Al Horford, we're not going to get that. But those are the types of flaws where that can nitpick. That's why this Philly thing is so real. This Philly thing is so damn real because Embiid is a monster. An absolute destructive monster in the paint, from the perimeter, and on defense. Then you have Ben Simmons, who is a freak of nature at 6'10", 6'11", handling the point, who has that LeBron-esque quality of being able to penetrate on anybody. I haven't seen too many people get in front of Ben Simmons and stop him from getting to where he wants to get to. And now he's slowly developing a mid-range game. Outside game ain't there yet. Hasn't even attempted a three. Hasn't even made a three-pointer this whole year. But he's itched out that mid-range game little by little as his season has progressed. If he ever gets that to be weapon, it's a wrap. And I think I've said that before. If he ever gets any kind of Jimmy, it's a wrap. But I'm starting to see it now where it's becoming a thing. Those are two studs. Those are two elite players, arguably top three, top five at their position going forward. What Boston Tatum, as nice as I think he's going to be, I don't think Tatum's ever going to be a guy where you could think he's good. He's like top three at his position. Jaylen Brown, as good as he looks and as multifaceted as he looks, I don't think he's going to be a guy where you're looking at him and saying, oh, he's top three at his position. But Embiid and Simmons are there. They're going to be there. And they're going to be there very quickly. That's what these other teams don't have. DeRozan is at his max. Lowry, as much as I think he's flawed, is at his max in terms of talent and output. Embiid and Simmons are just scratching the surface. They're just healthy enough to play a full season. Imagine once they figure out exactly what they want to do on a nightly basis for 82 games. Ridiculous. That's the type of team you need to beat a team like Cleveland that has a guy like LeBron. Having those two types of studs can overtake the singular greatness of a LeBron. And that's why, you know, however things shake out, the Eastern Conference Finals, I want to see. I don't want to see Cleveland-Toronto. I know how that's going to play. I've seen that movie too many times over the last 4 or 5 years. I know how that movie ends. I want Philly-Cleveland. I want to see it. I want to see it go about 6-7 games. That's what I want to see. I want to see Cleveland-Philly. That's what I'm here for. I don't know if we're going to get it. Because, you know, Embiid out here cracked his face over the bone. Thanks, Markel. Markel Fultz knocked that head. Embiid's been out. So now we're assuming Embiid's going to be back in time for the playoffs, at least for the first round, no doubt. But I would like to see a relatively healthy Embiid with Ben Simmons, with that crowd that's going to be nuts because they got a winner, trust the process. But I want to see that because I think those two playing at a high level have enough decent pieces around them to potentially, because this Cavs team is flawed, potentially, they have a chance to get to the finals, man. No bullshit. Seriously. Cavs, Sixers, Eastern Conference Finals, I'm here for. Man, let's slide over to the Western Conference and check out what's going over there. So the Dubs took another L tonight. You know, they're at 57 wins and they have an outside chance of getting 60. It's going to be an ugly 60 if they get it, but 60 is still 60. But man, as much as we just want to fast forward to a, you know, Rockets, Dubs, Western Conference Finals, are we sure we're going to get that? I mean, I still deep down think we're going to get that. I think that's the Western Conference Finals we want and the Western Conference Finals we're going to get. But man, your man Steph Curry, weak-ass hamstring, ankle, meniscus, ball joints, tendons, Steph Curry. Everything weak. Man, he's always one slip, one wet spot in the Toyota Center, one JaVale McGee bump, one anything from the Dubs looking not superhuman. They go from a machine while fully constituted healthy to a really, really good team, borderline elite, when Steph ain't there. And that might just be enough to let Houston and a point fraud with the beard sneak by them. I mean, Houston's still on cruise control, 64 wins. Outside chance has 67 wins. And when you look at the in terms of the playoffs, is there any teams that could challenge the Dubs or the Rockets? I don't see any team that could challenge the Rockets right now. I mean, the playoffs started tonight. They'll be playing the Pels. As much as I love Anthony Davis, ain't no way Anthony Davis getting more than one game, if that, on the Rockets. And then you look at a potential second-round matchup, Utah-San Antonio in the 4-5. San Antonio with no Kawhi. Or even if Utah, who I think has a really good chance to pull an upset if things remain right now, where it's the 4-5 Utah-San Antonio. Earlier tonight, it was going to be Utah-OK3. But, you know, with a 4-5 being Utah-San Antonio, any of those teams got get more than a game? More than a game. Does Utah or San Antonio get more than a game on Houston? I don't think so. But them Dubs, though. Two-time fraudulent MVP. Weak-ass ankles. Soft hamstrings. One wrong step on a wet spot. Ankled. Steph Curry. And them Dubs, though. 2-7 matchup right now would be against Minnesota. And I'm watching Minnesota right now struggle against the Denver Nuggets. But Jimmy Buckets is back. And we know how Tibbs do. Cat playing 48. Wiggins playing 48. Jimmy playing 48. T playing 40. I think the T-Wolves could give the Dubs some problems. Now, that's not me saying they're going to upset the Dubs. When I say give the Dubs problems, that means they might get a game or two. They're fully capable of taking that series to 6. And then if they get past that, you're looking at Portland or OK3. Waiting on the Dubs. If you're the Dubs and you're trying to get healthy and you got your two-time fraudulent MVP with weak-ass ankles, a wet spot, a bad step on the wet spot in Toronto Center, point guard away, the last thing you want to see is Dame Dalla, is CJ McCollum come running up in the Oracle. That's the last thing you want to see. Because even though they may take care of them in a relatively quick fashion, i.e. 5 games, that's going to be a hard 5. They're going to have to be on point with their shots all 5 games. OK3, sexy matchup on paper. Huge ratings if that happens. You get the Dubs, OK3 in round 2. That'd be lit. I'm here for that. PG-13, Hoodie Mello and Russie. Corey Brewer, low-key, fitting in. Against the Dubs with Clay learning to shoot with an altered shooting hand. KD coming off a rib. Draymond coming off having to carry the load and being exposed as just being an okay player when he's not surrounded by 3 All-Stars. And then your 2-time fraudulent MVP with weak-ass ankles, hamstrings, quads. Who's one bad step on a wet spot in Toyota Center away from being out here? The last thing they want to see is a motivated Russie, Hoodie Mello, and PG-13. Now, I think the Dubs would have an easier time with OK3 than Portland. Now, a lot of y'all saying, how is that? OK3 got 3 stars. Portland only got 2. Yeah, Portland only got 2. But Portland got bigs, and Portland got a more established system that they could run that runs similar to the Warriors. Portland can run with the Dubs. Not run enough. Run good enough. But they could run with the Dubs. Okay, three. Despite the success they've had in the regular season against Houston and against the Dubs, 4 out of 7? Nah. 3 out of 5? Nah. 2 out of 3? Eh. This whole Kawhi thing is funny though, right? Like this whole Kawhi Leonard thing is funny because it's led me to think of two things. It's led me to think of how one move has kind of painted the Spurs in a way that has kind of put them in the box that may have put them in the situation that they're in now, right? Like, for you youngins, Tim Duncan almost dipped on the Spurs, right? He became a free agent. He was pretty much locked and loaded to go to Orlando. Doc Rivers was coach. T-Mac, Grant Hill, Tim Duncan. That was going to be the super team to go to Florida. That was going to be the whole LeBron, Bosh, Wade, not one, not two, not three. Duncan, Grant Hill, T-Mac, that was going to be that. Back then. And it was pretty much a go. And then Doc Rivers had to fuck it up. Doc Rivers fucked it up. Doc Rivers went out there and during the dinner with Grant Hill. And I believe T-Mac was there. I believe he was at the dinner as well. Only thing Timmy asked. The only thing that the arguably the greatest power forward ever requested from Doc Rivers was for the families to be able to fly with the team. And Doc Rivers said, absolutely not. You have arguably, well, damn that. You have the greatest power forward in the history of the game willing to come to your team to play with T-Mac and Grant Hill. T-Mac, Grant Hill. One guy in the Hall of Fame last year. One just got in this year. And you're going to have Tim Duncan on top of that. And Doc Rivers didn't want to promise that the Duncans could fly on the team plane. So now look at the narrative that was created because of that idiotic asinine move by Doc Rivers, right? So now Duncan goes back to San Antonio. So now he plays his whole career in San Antonio. So that creates the culture of winning of San Antonio. And it starts from David Robinson and that whole thing. Never left San Antonio, championships. Bringing Tim Duncan at the tail end of David Robinson. So one passed the baton to the other. Tim Duncan now. Played for damn near 20 years, if not 20 years, all with San Antonio, never left, multiple championships, passed the baton to Kawhi. Kawhi now is supposed to be that next one. And he stepped up when Duncan was at the tail end, passed the baton, Kawhi Leonard, championships. But the problem was, now people are expecting Kawhi and this culture of winning in San Antonio to never leave. And the thing about San Antonio is, San Antonio don't pay, bro. You're not going to get what you want in terms of endorsements. You're not going to get what you want in terms of popularity. You're not going to get whatever you want in terms of just being popping in San Antonio. And, you know, the media would lead you to believe that Kawhi is a quiet dude, doesn't like a lot of attention. And a lot of that does seem to be somewhat accurate. But Kawhi has some personality. He likes to make fun of himself. You saw that Foot Locker commercial where he was playing the straight man. I mean, how many dudes you know that are quiet got nicknames. He's the Claw. Kawhi is the Claw. He's got a nick. I don't know any other quiet dudes that got nicknames out here. Kawhi Leonard's got more swag, more personality than you think. It's just the culture of the Spurs, the culture of Popovich, the culture of the Spurs way, coinciding with the subduedness of Kawhi, makes it overwhelming, like, oh, he's just buying into the Spurs way. Nah, man, he wants to get his, because he wants to get paid, and he wants to be able to be popping out here, because he likes Jays. He likes Jays just like anybody else likes Jays. So he out here trying to get a good sneaker contract, trying to get some commercials, trying to get the sponsorship bread up. He wants Nike to cut that check. And for that to happen, he can't be in San Antonio. And I think it's a wrap for him in San Antonio. I think he's out of there. So the second part of that is, so now we had the myth of the Spurs culture, I think, has been debunked. For me, it was debunked years ago when I learned that story of how close pretty much Tim Duncan was ready to bounce. You know, the whole mythology of the Spurs way and all of that stuff was a wrap for me once I learned that Tim Duncan was basically out the door, and because Doc Rivers fucked it up so much, he went back. Because if the Spurs way is the Spurs way, then Doc Rivers couldn't have been in a position to lure Tim Duncan away. It wouldn't have come down to a simple question of, can my wife and kids be on the plane? Can the Duncans be on the charter? And Doc out here saying no. Not our chair out here, because he fucked it up. So that, poof, the Spurs magic was gone for me. So that's that part. But now the second part is, man, if Kawhi leaves, what the hell is left? Old ass Tony Parker, old ass Manu Ginobili, who were taking shots subtly and not so subtly at Kawhi in the press. You think Kawhi's coming back to that? You think the Claw is coming back to that? So now they're going to be stuck with LaMarcus Aldridge. And while I used to think that was a bad thing, shit, he been balling. Dog, you been seeing the numbers? He's the leading scorer over the last, what, 2-3 weeks? This LaMarcus Aldridge I have not seen since about his third or fourth year in Portland when he was beasting. He looks like, and again, he don't look like Duncan. He don't play like Duncan. But he's giving you Duncan-like production over the last 2.5-3 weeks since this whole Kawhi drama's been going on in the background. And the Spurs, who we thought were done. Spurs at one point were the 9. I think they were the 10 seed at one point. Now they're sitting at 5. Over 10 games. 11 games over 500. And a low-key chance to be the 3 seed. Very small chance. More likely to end up being the 4 seed. But just go back like 2.5 to 3 weeks. When we were writing the eulogy of the Spurs. And now they are low-key have a chance to be the 3 seed. More likely to end up being the 4 to 5 in the West. In the West. Not the East. That's a little watered down. But you could kind of figure it out and still end up being a 3 seed. What up, Cleveland? But you can lose your best player, have your second best player have a subpar first half, have your vets continue to erode in ability, and still end up a 4-5 seed in the West. That's impressive. You know, there was the outside. There was the outside thought of possibly LeBron going to San Antonio, and I just don't see it. I mean, we have Devontae Murray, Denny Green. There's some young pieces there. There's some young pieces in San Antonio, but they're not to the level of where you can lure a guy like LeBron to come in. LeBron and Kawhi would not be enough on their own in San Antonio. And you're not going to get other high-key players. You're not going to get, you know, imagine, obviously, just spitballing. But if you imagine you could get LeBron and Paul George down there to San Antonio to play with Kawhi Leonard. Would that even be enough in the West? I don't know. I don't know if that would be enough. It would be amazing just to see how that would play out. But I'm not even sure if that's enough in the West. That might be better than Houston. Might. But I wouldn't guarantee that. So that's the problem with San Antonio, is that they have the young pieces in Murray, Anderson, Denny Green, as you know, he is what he is. He's a rotational player. But you know, you got old ass Pau Gasol, Ginobili, Parker. You can't trust those three. Rudy Gay, who's kind of fit into that kind of mellow stretch four mold at this point in his career. Those dudes can't be trusted long term. So if you're Kawhi and all you see going forward outside of Pop and R.C. Buford waving a magic wand and being able to lure another piece there, or a couple of pieces really to compete with the Rockets and the Dubs, to a lesser extent, Portland, Minnesota, Utah, OK3, with the likes of Anderson, Murray, and Denny Green, and a bunch of old dudes. How, Sway? How? So, I don't blame Kawhi for shutting it down. No reason to come back. You're not winning the chip this year. You might not even make it out the first round this year, even with Kawhi. So why risk it all? Force that trade. Opt out. Let's see how good Pop really is. When he doesn't have an elite player on his roster and he has to actually start from scratch, let's see how good that Spurs way, that Spurs culture is. Let's see it. You hear a lot about teams' culture. Oh, this team has a good culture. You know, the Heat have a good culture with Riley and Spoelstra, and they build players up. Yeah, it helps to have, you know, a young D-Wade in 06. And it helps to have the triplets for 2 out of 4 championships from 2010 to 2014. That's really good for your culture. Having a young D-Wade, Shaq, Alonzo Mourning, Gary Payton. And then what's also great for your culture is having LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, Ray Allen, Mike Miller, etc., etc., etc. That's great for culture. Having really elite talent is great for your culture. And then you hear about squads like the Knicks have a bad culture. And it doesn't matter whether it's Jeff Hornacek, Phil Jackson, Mark Jackson, whoever you want to put in there. As long as the talent is trash, your culture is going to be trash. So let me see what Pop can do. As much as I like Pop from a social standpoint, let me see what Pop and R.C. Buford can do about this Spurs winning thing with no elite players. One thing before I wrap this up. I know in the past I have talked about the whole coach GM or coach VP of basketball operations thing. Man, it's not working. Stan Van is out of here. They got to get him up out of there. He needs to resign one, if not both positions. Because you went and you flipped Tobias and Boban for the Kia jumper, and you're out the playoffs, and you're out the playoffs by a good margin. By a good margin. you're going to finish under 500. Now, you're going to spin this whole Reggie Jackson thing. That happened way before the Kia jumper trade. And you won the first couple of games right after the Kia jumper trade was made. What happened, bruh? You had a couple of interesting lineups with where you went super big with Blake and Drummond on the floor with Stanley Johnson. And then you got cute. And you just don't have the horses. And why don't you have the horses? Because Stan Van don't know how to pick good horses. Maybe he can coach him up once you give him horses. But you want him to pick the horses and coach him up? That's asking a lot. And then you got y'all boys Tibbs, who was by force my boy Tibbs. Man, it ain't working in Minnesota either. I give you Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, who, you know, we kind of broke down and squashed that myth of how elite he is. But still in the sense of being a good player, I give you Jimmy Buckets, Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns, a solid big man in Taj Gibbs. Taj Gibson, excuse me. Jeff Teague, who's in a, you know, an average, maybe slightly above average point guard. Jamal Crawford off the bench. And you still are having roster mismanagement issues. He's still running dudes into the ground. Who's in charge of drafting the players to get depth for this team? Oh, that'll be Tibbs. You're in charge of the draft. You're in charge of the free agent signings. The only move you made to enhance the bench was getting Jamal Crawford. Yeah, you got D-Rose off the scrap heap and a buyout, but that's not enhancing your team. So coaches who are president / GMs, they got to get the hell up out of here. You saw what happened to Doc Rivers last year. They stripped him of that duty. You only get so much rope. Even if you want to run stuff, you can sell that to your owner. Your owner is still your boss. You can sell that to your boss for a shorter period of time. But if you're not getting results, your boss ain't stupid. So right now you got Tibbs, who's out here floundering as tied for the 7th seed. Potentially could miss the playoffs with a team of Karl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Buckets, and Andrew Wiggins. And then you have Stan Van, who flipped his best player in Tobias Harris for what we would perceive to be a better player in the Kia jumper. And he's not even going to make the playoffs. And real quick, let me check the tanking standings before I get up out of here. The Be Trash to Be Great standings. Oh, man. My Bulls, who I support from the shadows, have really messed up their chances here. The Bulls in the Be Trash to Be Great movement. At one point, they were 7th in line for the 7th pick. They're now down to 9. They've won 3 games in a row. They're tied with the Knicks with 27 wins. 4 games left. Won 3 games in a row. They've now dwindled their chances from 4.3% to 2.2%. So they've cut their chances damn near in half. But Phoenix holding on strong. 20 wins. Memphis hot on their heels. Phoenix, Memphis, Atlanta. Those are 1, 2, 3 right now in terms of the tanking rankings. Phoenix right now, 25% chance. Memphis, 19.9. Atlanta, 15.6. Really sticking to that Be Trash to Be Great movement. Dallas, 11.9% at number one overall, 24-55. And Dirk says he's coming back. Man, one of these days, we got to get into how Dirk has left so much money on the table and keeps coming back for the low. Meanwhile, while he's the best player in franchise history. They're throwing bags at Wes Matthews, Harrison Barnes, and Chandler Parsons. One of these days, we're going to have to get into that. But anyway, that will do it for me. I am Sam Dusenberry. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD. That's TheSamD. Subscribe and rate on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Search for the Pick and Pop Podcast on Apple iTunes. Search Pick and Pop, no and, Pick the letter N, Pop Podcast. On Twitter, use the hashtag Pick and Pop to keep up with the show, to find out where it's being posted, when it's being done. Stitcher Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud.com/showfreesports is where you can find the Pick and Pop Podcast. Shout out to May 1st Music, who does the intro and outro. Support him. Just dropped a couple of new beats. SoundCloud.com/May1st Music. All right, y'all. As we get closer to the playoffs now, first round, I'm going to try to do 2 pods a week from the beginning of the playoffs all the way to the end of the playoffs. So until that Larry O'Brien trophy goes up, barring a bunch of sweeps that gives us a lot of downtime in between, I'm going to try to be in the mix and have 2 pods a week. So be on the lookout for that. We'll definitely do a preview of the playoffs. Working on getting a guest. You know, each month I'm trying to do a guest, maybe even do 2 as we get into the playoffs here. But definitely working on the guest for next week. Hopefully I'll be able to have that set up for y'all and do it like how we did last time. Should be a good, interesting conversation with the 2 people I have in mind. So we'll get that done. But I am Sam Dusenberry Jr., Pick and Pop Podcast. I'm out.